Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. So last night we started seeing with various parliamentary amendments to the withdrawal agreement being tabled. Katie, what are some of them?
So Theresa May had to give a statement to the House on Monday about her next Brexit steps. As expected, her plan B is very much her plan A. And she is laying down a Brexit motion next week. And MPs can add their own amendments. They need to be selected. And then there will be votes on them. Now, several of these amendments we've heard about for some time because there have been stories of plots to stop Brexit, to use those words, in the papers. So we have the Yvette Cooper amendment, which is aimed specifically at avoiding a no-deal Brexit. So if no deal can be agreed by, you know, late February, what would happen would be Article 50 would just be extended. That is backed by Nick Bowles, and that is one amendment which is seen to have a chance of passing with cross-party support. Theresa May is also under pressure because some of her own cabinet, some of her junior ministers and cabinet ministers have made clear that they want to be able to back some of these options, and there's a risk that she could actually face resignations, not from the Brexit side, but from the Remain side of her cabinet, if this isn't a free vote. But I think the amendment which caused the most excitement last night was the official Labour Party amendment, which was more of a surprise. And that amendment suggested that what the Labour frontbench advocate is that MPs should be able to vote on Brexit options. And those Brexit options must include a vote on Labour's proposed Brexit plan, which would mean a permanent customs union, meaning no free trade deals. And secondly, on the idea of having a public vote on a phrase at which a majority of the House can agree on. Now, that latter point was quickly read in some circles as Labour moving to back a second referendum, or at least getting closer to backing a second referendum, because it puts that option up as something MPs could vote on. I think the People's Vote campaigners shouldn't get the champagne out just yet, because A, Corbyn's amendment's very unlikely to pass, because Tory MPs who want to soften Brexit probably don't want to be associated with a Labour Party amendment, and you've already heard some Tory Remainers saying that. Secondly, that amendment is very carefully worded. It doesn't say that the Labour Party would support a public vote. It doesn't say in that vote what side they would be on or what they would push for. It doesn't even say if Labour MPs would be supposed to vote for that. And thirdly, were you to actually have a vote, say, Tuesday, on whether MPs support a second referendum and among the various Brexit options, I think few believe there'd be a majority in the House for that. We had last week Labour MPs come publicly and say if they backed a second referendum, and we got to the grand total of 71. So I think Corbyn can make this gesture, and actually in some ways it's clever politics, because it looks a little bit like he is moving closer to something which will appeal to the pro-EU membership, but actually the substance just isn't there.
And James, we're going to move on to the Labour amendment in just a second, but let's first talk about the Cooper amendment, which is the most likely to pass out of all of these. Now, it says that we should extend Article 50 if there's no deal agreed by a certain date. But how can we unilaterally extend Article 50?
Well, we can't. We can ask the EU to extend Article 50. I think the thinking on this has slightly shifted in recent weeks, which is it had previously been the view that the EU wouldn't extend Article 50 just to allow kind of more time for Georgia. I think there is, though, now, as kind of the prospect of the reality of no deal sinks in, there's probably a greater chance the EU would extend it, in part because the EU doesn't want to look like the side that triggered no deal. So I think it probably does have a decent chance. I mean, the fascinating thing about the Cooper Amendment is, what does the government do, given that there are a large number of government ministers who are determined not to vote against it?
Such as?
So Richard Harrington, the business minister, is the most obvious one. Amber Rudd is the most obvious one in cabinet. Now, what do you do about that? It is not in this situation normally. You'd think, all right, well, we'll send them off somewhere else. You know, famously, Boris Johnson went to Afghanistan rather than vote for a third runway at Heathrow. You can't really do that because there are too many of them, and there are a whole series of votes on Tuesday. I think that means that the government probably needs to get its skates on in terms of what it's doing before Tuesday. I'd also think the most interesting thing is the amendment we haven't seen yet. We haven't seen an amendment designed to try and push whatever solution the government thinks might work on the backstop.
So from Andrew Morrison again, for example?
Yeah, possibly. Or, you know, the question is, where do you go to get an amendment where you try and show the EU you actually can get this thing through Parliament with this change? Just look at how many people are backing this amendment. I think Katie's analysis on the Labour Brexit amendment is right, which is, I think what you're going to see from them is that Corbyn will never say, oh, I am setting my face against a second referendum in its entirety. His desire to avoid a kind of split means he's just going to keep, you know, giving them just enough hope, in the hope that the people don't feel the need to go kind of full bore on him.
Now, the Cooper Amendment, if it goes through and succeeds in pushing back the withdrawal date, then does that mean we have more of chances of a general election as well, given that we don't have this March deadline coming up?
I don't think it means you have more of a chance of a general election per se. I mean, if we were to have a general election, Article 50 will probably have to be extended. Sure. But the intention of this amendment is purely to take no deal off the table. And actually, if you start to get there, I mean, some people have argued that it would help Theresa May get her deal through, because if no deal is taken off the table, then you'll have lots of Leave MPs who will have to reluctantly get behind her deal.
Which we saw last night with Nadine Dorries and Darren Grimes, a campaigner as well.
Yes, we've noticed some Brexiters with their language softening towards it, and that's been happening, I think, since last week a bit. But if you start to do that, then they might get behind the deal. But it would also, I think, remove the incentive for a lot of Labour MPs who don't like the idea of a no-deal Brexit to get behind Theresa May's deal. They would suddenly think they had time to play for, and they could push towards the small things they want, the small changes, whether it's closer to Labour's position, or if they want to go for something more like Norway Plus. So I don't think it would actually help Theresa May that much in getting her deal through.
Now, one thing that could save Theresa May's deal, if indeed anything can save it, is any changes to the backstop. And last night we heard from the Polish foreign minister that the EU should alter the backstop to be time limited to 5 years. James, is this EU unity breaking up?
I don't think you should read too much into it, in that the Poles have made sallies on this front before, and they didn't appear to get much momentum. I mean, part of Theresa May's problem is the size of her defeat. The size of her defeat has made the EU wanted to conclude that what was really needed to get this deal through Parliament was a political declaration pointing to a softer Brexit. The size of the defeat has enabled them to say, well, you don't lose by 230 votes just because of the backstop. So the real problem must also be in the political declaration. I think a result that would have challenged EU unity much more would have been if the vote had gone down by, say, 30 rather than 230. And it was quite clear that some changes to the backstop would enable Theresa May to get the deal over the line. I think the question on the backstop, there will be huge European reluctance to reopen the withdrawal agreement. The one thing that I do keep going around in my head, though, is Article 50 is clear that it cannot be the basis for the permanent relationship between the UK and the EU. Point one. So the backstop, therefore, by the EU's own definition, can't be permanent. Secondly, the Irish will have a veto on the future UK-EU free trade deal. And so essentially, that gives the Irish a chance to ensure that they get a backstop-like structure in that trade deal. You know, that essentially they can say in that trade deal, we want provisions made in that trade deal that would keep the Irish border pretty much as it is today. And so that might mean that Northern Ireland might need some specific provisions. So when you combine those two things, it does make me wonder whether something is possible in terms of a change for Theresa May to be able to say, oh, look, I've got something that limits the backstop, but without the EU and the Irish having to give up that much. I think the EU are determined to wait for the Irish on this, in that they think it's an important demonstration that, you know, that how the power of a relatively small country is magnified by EU membership. But that is the question. I mean, if Theresa May is going to have any hope of getting anywhere on the backstop, though, she needs to prove that a change on the backstop would deliver the 320 odd votes needed to pass it. You know, she needs somehow to find, you know, I mean, I'm only half joking. You need to find, you know, either a parliamentary motion needs to pass with that number of votes, basically say, look, that's doable, or she needs to get, you know, 322 of them to write a letter to some, you know, newspapers across Europe saying, we'd all vote for a deal that included this, you know, signed by, and then a whole bunch of names. Because the Europeans aren't going to even entertain this if it's not clear that it will do the trick.
Yeah, and going back to those amendments, which never feels that juicy a topic, but when you're looking at whether one will come from the government side, something that I think is being considered in the Whip's office is an amendment about a sunset clause or something a bit like that, a bit like the Morrison one, but maybe slightly different, which they think that if they could get figures like the DUP to get behind that amendment on top of Brexiteers, that would start to show to Brussels, hey, work with us, we can get something through.
Is there the possibility that Berko might not select something so friendly to the government?
I think there's always a possibility.
I mean, that again hugely depends on how many signatures you can get on the amendment. If you could get hundreds of signatures on the amendment, it would be implausible for him not to suggest it. Equally, you know, if he won't select it, the government could bring forward its own motion saying, you know, this House supports the withdrawal agreement with the following.
I see. James and Katie, thanks very much. And you can subscribe to this podcast, Coffee House Shots, on the iTunes store. And do leave us a review. And now our marketing team has actually cottoned on to how bankrupting this deal with the John Lewis voucher is. So if you want to get 12 issues of The Spectator for just £12 plus a £20 John Lewis voucher, then you'll have to go to spectator.co.uk/voucher before the end of the month. I repeat, before the end of the month. Thanks very much for listening, and do join us again tomorrow.